Chapter 8. A desperate howl echoed around the stone towers as I flew headlong toward the beast with Aliona, Nokomis, Lyca, the Dryads, and Nike right behind me. I barreled into the creature, and we both slammed into one of the rock formations with a thud that seemed to shake the entire planet. The beast threw its head back and let out a strangled screech, and I finally got a good look at my opponent. It was some kind of bird, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Its head was shaped like an eagle with white feathers above its eyes and down the back of its neck, but its wide body was covered in brown, slimy scales that I quickly realized had oozed onto my talons. The beast was nearly as big as I was, but the slime and the stench soon told me it was corrupted. As I pulled myself away, chunks of scaly skin stuck to my underbelly, and a wave of bile rose in my throat.
"He must be given mercy,"
Mariah reminded me in a soothing voice. Mercy, right. The creature screeched at me again before it shoved itself away from the rock formation and flew toward me with its black, rotted claws outstretched. I dodged to the side and wrapped my talons around its neck as it flew past. And then I used the beast's momentum to slam it into the nearest pile of boulders. Black blood oozed from its injured head. But I knew that wouldn't stop a corrupted creature. I opened my maw and released a column of flames onto the scaly bird. And in a matter of seconds, the beast was reduced to ashes.
"What the hell was that thing?" Mael asked.
I looked down to see the Alpha kneeling next to his injured pack member. And I released a cloud of healing magic over the wolf before I responded. "I'm not sure, but..." I started. Then another fierce caw pierced the air, and I looked up to see a pair of bird beasts as they zoomed over the Yassel stone caves toward us. "But there are more," I finished, as I flew up to meet them. The first one slammed into me, but I was ready for the impact, and I spun its body around to crash into one of the caves. It flopped over the mouth of the cave and fell to the stone ground with a thump. Then it squawked again, but I tore my attention away to focus on the one still in the air. The third beast released a wild screech as it flew down with its dead, beady eyes focused on me, and I opened my mouth to bellow fire into its face. The bird reacted more quickly than I'd expected, and it dipped below the fire to go for my rear leg. I kicked the beast with my clawed foot, and I felt its skin slough away as I made contact. The creature started to fall and caught itself, but I looked past it to see the wolves had descended on the second creature. They tore into its rotted flesh with their claws, while Aliona and Lyca warned them not to use their teeth. We didn't need the Tunglians to get poisoned with miasma, but they seemed to be doing plenty of damage with their claws. I focused on the last beast, which seemed to have better reflexes than its partners, and it had already regained its balance from my kick. The creature squawked at me and beelined for my chest, but I turned to let it whiz by me. Then I followed it into the air and slashed through its slimy belly with my talons, and more of the black ooze dripped down to the ground below us. The creature hardly noticed the damage as it looped around and targeted me again. But this time it had something I wasn't expecting. Gray and yellow liquid dribbled down its rotting beak. And as I was trying to figure out what it was, the beast squirted it at me. Instinctively, I closed my eyes to keep the goo out. And that seemed to be what the bird hoped for. The beast collided with me, and we both flew over the tops of several Yassel stone caves until I dug my claws into one of the rock formations and dragged us to a stop. Then I took advantage of the beast's confusion and flipped over to pin it on its back. It seemed like the creature barely squirmed beneath me, and I knew it was ready to die. For real, this time. The corrupted creatures were dead already, and then brought back to life, kind of, by the miasma. It was just one of a thousand reasons we had to get rid of the breach. We couldn't risk the miasma taking or reanimating any more corpses. I opened my mouth and bellowed flames onto the bird beast's hardly squirming body. Then I rose to my feet and let the wind blow the ashes away before I flapped my wings and headed back to where the Tunglians had been fighting the second beast. As soon as I landed, I shifted back to my human form and joined the rest of my people.
"Looks like just three of them," Nike said as he wiped black blood from the blade of his sword. "We helped finish that one off."
Not much remained of the corrupted creature, and the Tunglian's fur was drenched in black ooze.
"What is this stuff?"
Mael asked, as he started to touch one of his pack members' fur. "Part of the corrupted creature," I replied. "They don't exactly bleed anymore because they were already dead. The miasma brings them back to life."
"To do what?" the Alpha wondered.
I thought about his question for a moment. It seemed the corrupted creatures were always out to kill us, but did they always go after us? Aliona had always thought it was strange how the miasma seemed to know where to go, who to infect, and what would do the most damage to our cause. And the more I thought about it now, the more I realized it wasn't just a hive mind thinking like I'd considered before. The miasma was under someone's control, and I could think of only one person who would be so evil. "The Demon King," I finally said. "He's got to be the one behind the miasma and the corrupted creature attacks. He must have a way to control it from the underworld."
"That would make sense,"
Aliona agreed.
"The miasma is always trying to stop us from getting closer to ending the breach."
"Which means we must be close now," I mused as I looked around us. "Where exactly was your man when he got attacked?"
"Over here,"
Mael answered, and led us over to one of the caves. I walked over to the Yasselstone caves, but the only thing inside were the emerald-colored stones on the walls. I knew we had to be close, and I wanted to dive into the treasure once we found it. Treasure. As soon as I thought the word, I felt the tug of my dragon instincts that pulled me toward the nearest treasure. The mental pull dragged me northwest, and Mael followed with a curious look on his face, while my people were used to my random instincts. The Runsa pack was close behind, and I was glad to see the injured wolf was good to go and ran right alongside the others. The tall rock formations became fewer and further between until I could smell the breach and ocean in an odd combination of salt and decay along the flat stony landscape.
"Where is it?"
I grumbled to myself. But the mental tug continued to push me forward, and I needed to trust my instincts to keep going. Then it seemed like the stone ground simply fell away. A large canyon expanded before us, and I couldn't tell exactly how deep it was, though I could hear a river running far below the surface where we stood. My instincts told me we had to go down from here, and I knew the easiest way would be to fly.
"Where do we go from here, my lord?"
Aliona asked from behind me.
"Down," I replied. "I'm going to fly into the canyon. Will you come with me? You'll know what we're looking for better than I would."
"Of course,"
she said with a smile. I grinned and jumped off the edge of the cliff. I heard the Tunglians gasp in surprise, but I shifted mid-air and soared back up over the canyon's edge in my dragon form.
"You nearly sent me into a panic,"
Mael yelled as he tried to stifle a smile.
"That's the best part."
I winked and lowered my body to give Aliona an easy step onto my back. My wife slid on, grabbed a spike, and held on tight. Then I flapped my wings and followed the pull toward treasure. About 100 yards down the cliffside, a small overhang jutted out from the wall, and I hovered in front of it to peer inside.
"Is this it?"
Aliona asked.
"Oh, yeah," I replied. "This is it."
I eased onto the overhang and let Aliona slide down to the ground before I shifted back to my human form. Then I lit a fireball in my palm and guided the princess deeper into the cave. While all the other caves had been filled with the Yasselstones on the walls, this one was much different. It featured green, yellow, blue, purple, and orange stones in a rainbow of gemstones all across the stone walls. We walked further inside, and the tunnel split into two, but my treasure-hunting instincts were on point. I veered to the right, and a few minutes later, we walked into a large cavern. And there it was. Mounds of gold coins were piled high along every wall of the cavern, and various jewels and silver accessories were intermixed with the gold. My inner dragon roared with excitement,
and I wholeheartedly agreed.
I'll find the totems,
Aliona said as she glanced over at me.
You get whatever else you want.
Deal, I replied, before I sprinted toward one of the piles. I scooped handful after handful of gold and jewelry into my spatial storage, and I couldn't wait to add it to my hoard back in Hatra. There were quite a few dragon myths I couldn't get behind, but hoarding treasure was the one I wouldn't disagree with. I moved on to the next pile and turned to check Aliona's progress. The princess examined a mirror nearly as tall as she was, and she touched the surface with a gentle finger. Her reflection shimmered as though the mirror was made from water, and she grinned before she rolled it into her own spatial storage. If I was a gambling man, I'd guess that was Reynald's mirror. I returned to filling my hoard stash while she tucked away at least a dozen magical items in her spatial storage. And by the time we were both finished, the cavern had less than half the treasure left. As much as I wanted to keep adding to my hoard, we needed to get the totems back to King Rodion. Plus, it wouldn't hurt to offer the rest of the gold to the Tunglians as a thank you. Did you find everything you needed? I asked.
Oh, I think we found more than enough,
Aliona grinned as I held out my elbow to her. She linked her arm through mine, and we hurried back out of the tunnel and onto the ledge. I was a little less dramatic with my shift this time, but I still had to step off the edge to have enough room. When I floated back up to my wife, she giggled as she climbed onto my back, and I flew to the edge of the canyon where everyone else waited.
Well?
Lyca asked as she uncrossed her arms.
Did you find the treasure?
Oh, yeah, I laughed. We found it all right, tons of it. And we got the totems for the king.
Thank the gods,
Nokomis breathed, and her spotted leopard ears twitched with relief.
He looked like he needed the help.
Yeah, so we should get back to the temple, I said as Lyca helped Aliona get down. Oh, and I left a few things in there for you, Mael. You did? The Alpha looked surprised as his eyebrows shot up. I thought dragons loved treasure. We do, I chuckled. But I also wanted to thank you for all your help. We couldn't have accomplished any of this without you, so there's plenty of gold still in the cave. Just make sure you turn right when the tunnel splits. Turn right, Mael murmured. Got it. We'd better get going, I said. We need to get the totems to the king. A few of the Tunglians shifted to their human forms to tell us goodbye, including Shaya. She breezed through the other wolves to wrap her arms around Nike and planted a big, wet kiss on his lips.
You're welcome to come back any time,
she said in a voice loud enough for everyone to hear.
And I mean any time.
Thanks, Nike replied as a blush darkened his skin. Maybe, once we get the breach closed and everything.
I'll be here.
Shaya winked and swatted Nike on the ass before she returned to her wolf form and ran back toward the forest.
If she isn't mated, you are welcome to visit her, Lord Nikolaus, Mael said, as amusement twitched across his lips. And you are all welcome in a fur whenever you please. Thank you for helping us rid our territory of the vermin.
Anytime, I replied with an easy smile. See you around.
Around what?
He asked, as he furrowed his brow in confusion.
Don't worry about him,
Lyca giggled. Aliona smiled and shook her head as she opened a portal to the White Jade Temple. The landscape beyond her magical doorway showed the courtyard of the castle, and we offered our final waves to the Tunglians before we stepped through it.
Your Highness, the king is on the balcony, one of the guards advised as we walked toward the temple doors.
Thank you,
Aliona called out before she turned back to us.
Let's hurry. He'll be so happy.
She nearly sprinted up the stairs to the second floor, and I cringed as she hurried. I didn't want her to fall and hurt herself or the baby, but I didn't want to slow her down now. She wanted to help her father, and I knew I could rely on my swiftness ability to protect them both if I had to. Aliona burst through the door of her father's chambers and startled the two women who were cleaning up his room. One of them dropped the pile of clothes she held in her hands, while the other almost knocked over a tray of tea.
Your Highness!
The second one gasped.
Sorry, ladies, I'm just in a hurry,
Aliona said in a rush of words as she hurried past them to the balcony. King Rodion was in his high-backed chair that overlooked the Mihareti Mountains and the breach, and he was sound asleep. If I didn't know any better, I'd think he looked dead. But Aliona squatted down in front of him and gently patted his leg.
Hmm?
The king mumbled as his eyes fluttered open.
Father, we have the totems,
Aliona said, as her face flushed with excitement.
Look!
She began to pull the various items from her spatial storage, and I soon realized she'd grabbed more than I'd thought. The mirror, the cup of Natura, and the necklace from Morgard were only a minor portion of what she'd brought back for the king. Aliona slipped a thin gold bracelet with about a dozen charms on it over her father's wrist and murmured something under her breath. The charms lit up with a white light, and Rodion almost immediately sat up straighter in his chair.
Oh, gods, he sighed. That's better.
Windsor's charm,
Aliona explained.
And I have...
The duo discussed each of the items we'd brought back, and they worked their magic on each of them. Nike and I looked out over the edge of the balcony, and I frowned as I caught a glimpse of more demons swimming just under the surface of the seal. They had become bolder and bolder while Rodion grew weaker, and now they were brazen enough to remain in clear view as they waited for the seal to give out. Then I noticed something else. As Aliona and Rodion enchanted each of the totems, my view of the demons grew hazier. In fact, every time they finished a spell, it seemed like the seal thickened, like another layer had been added on top of the last. The demons didn't leave the surface, but the surface became further away from them with every stroke of magic. Are you seeing this? I asked Nike.
Yeah, the magic is definitely working, he murmured.
The seal is getting thicker.
Good, we needed the extra time, I said. This should buy us enough time to find the last few nobles of the sword.
About that, Nike started with a frown.
Before he could finish, my messenger dragon zipped through the air and landed on the balcony railing. It opened its mouth, and Mona's voice filled my ears.
Lord Evan!
She panted.
I'm in labor with the baby. Please, come to Lunman.
My heart nearly stopped in my chest. My daughter was coming, my firstborn. Then the little dragon disappeared in a puff of gray smoke, and I whirled around to see Aliona and my other women hadn't even noticed. They were absorbed in the spells with the king, and I rushed over to get their attention.
Mona's in labor, I announced. We need to hurry and get to Lumen.
Oh, gods,
Aliona gasped.
We're almost done, just a few minutes.
I refrained from tapping my foot impatiently as Aliona and Rodion whizzed through the last few items. Then he tucked a few into his spatial storage for later, and she kissed him on the cheek. His skin had already started to look brighter instead of like old paper, and the light returned to his violet eyes. The magical totem seemed to help him even more than any of us had expected, and I was happy to see the worry was gone from Aliona's face as well.
Go on, Rodion shooed Aliona away as she looked over her shoulder at him one more time. Don't miss the baby's birth.
I can't wait to see what she looks like,
Marina squealed.
Me either,
Trina agreed.
We'll find out soon enough,
Aliona assured them as she began to draw the portal in the air.
Let's get to Lumen.
Her father waved with more energy than I'd seen from him in weeks, and we hurried through the portal into the city of Lumen. It had been months since we visited the home of the centaurs, and a few of the citizens watched our magical entrance with an unfamiliar wariness. Then I saw a familiar face near the entrance to the castle, and though he hadn't liked me at first, he seemed to be relieved at my appearance now. River! I called out. The commander of the Sagittarius Order pushed his way through the bustling crowd and loomed over us with a solemn grimace. His bare chest was inked from his neck to the black fur of his legs. His long braid hung down his back, and his brown eyes registered an emotion I couldn't quite discern. Was he worried?
Lord Evan, thank the gods you've arrived, River said. Come, the queen wants you in the castle immediately.
Of course, I murmured, as we all headed toward the doors. As the guards opened the front doors, I could hear Mona scream in pain, and I felt every hair on my body stand up on end.
It's okay,
Aliona whispered as she squeezed my arm. I hadn't realized my hands were clenched into fists, and my teeth gritted together at the sound of Mona's pain. I wanted to take it away, and I couldn't imagine how much worse it would get as the labor progressed. River led us up the stairs, stopped at Mona's door, and turned around.
"I'm sorry, but you can't all come into the delivery room," he said with a frown. "Lord Evan and Princess Aliona are the only ones the Queen has requested."
"It's all right,"
Lyca sighed.
"We can see the baby once she's born, right?"
"I'm sure that can be accommodated," he agreed. "For now, I'll take the rest of you, somewhere."
"To the dining room?"
Nokomis asked with a half-smile.
"We haven't had lunch yet."
On cue, my stomach growled loud enough for them to hear, and I pursed my lips as I thought about getting some food in my belly. Then Mona let out another ear-piercing scream, and I decided the food would have to wait. I needed to be with her while she gave birth to our child, even if I felt like I hadn't eaten in days. River nodded, and he led the rest of our people back downstairs while Aliona and I pushed through the door to Mona's chambers. The familiar red and gold landscape of her room took me back to the day she'd asked me to help her bear a daughter, and I looked around at all the surfaces in the room we'd used to make that happen. Then my gaze fell on Mona. The centauress was as beautiful as ever, despite the sheen of sweat that covered her coppery skin. She was completely naked and in human form as she laid on her bed with a nurse by her side. Her stomach was swollen with our child, and I could hear both their hearts pumping as the moment of birth drew nearer. Mona's chestnut hair was twisted back into a braid that fell across the pillows, and her jade eyes were rimmed with tears. "Oh, gods," I groaned as I walked closer to the bed. Maybe I can heal her and take away some of the pain?"
"No, don't do that,"
Aliona grabbed my arm.
"If you heal her in the middle of labor, you can slow down the birthing process."
"Shit," I muttered. "She wouldn't appreciate that."
"Not at all,"
my wife agreed.
"You have to let her give birth first. Then you can heal her. She'll feel better if you do that."
"Okay. I guess I'll wait," I said with a frown. I continued over to the bed and knelt down beside it as I took Mona's hand. Her eyes rolled over in my direction, and she offered a faint smile before another wave of pain rolled through her body.
"Fuck!"
Mona screamed, and she squeezed my hand so tightly I felt my bones shift.
"Why isn't she out yet?"
"It takes time, Your Majesty,"
the nurse assured her.
"She's getting closer. She's moved into position already."
"Well, move her out!"
the Centaur Queen growled. "It's okay," I said as I patted her hand. "She's coming."
"Oh, I fucking hope so,"
Mona turned on me.
"Oh, the boys were not this difficult. Your child is..." "Ah!"
she gasped as another contraction hit her, and I remembered from my EMT classes that closer contractions meant birth was imminent. I held Mona's hand and tried to breathe calmly, but she cussed me out, thanked me, cried, and cussed me out some more before the nurse finally let out a deep breath.
"Oh, I see her head,"
she called out. "Finally," I said as I turned to Mona. "All right, she's going to tell you when to push. You've got this. You're a strong, badass centaur queen."
"I got this,"
Mona panted as sweat streamed down her face.
"I got this. I got this."
Then she took in a sharp breath, and the nurse spread her legs open.
"Push,"
she ordered. It only took 3 rounds of pushing before I heard the nurse's quiet gasp, followed by the littlest breaths I'd ever heard. And there she was, a tiny bundle of perfect tan skin and jet black hair. Despite being covered in goop, she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I waited impatiently as the nurse quickly wiped her clean and laid her on top of Mona's chest.
Oh, gods,
Mona sobbed.
"Oh, she's beautiful."
I was speechless. She was definitely beautiful. And I felt my heart swell with pride as I soaked in the sight of her tiny fingers and toes, her squishy cheeks, and her smooth skin. She was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And I couldn't believe this small person was part of me. I had to be the luckiest dragon alive. "Gorgeous," I agreed, as I gently ran my fingers through our daughter's dark hair. "She has your nose."
"And your chin,"
Mona choked out a laugh.
"Oh, she's perfect."
We murmured to the baby for a few minutes while the nurse cleaned Mona up, and I'd almost forgotten about healing her. I quickly sent a wave of healing magic over the queen and our baby just in case. And Mona let out a sigh of relief.
I told you she'd appreciate it afterwards.
Aliona giggled as she walked closer.
You're right.
Mona agreed with a smile.
I feel good as new, which is quite unlike birthing the boys. I was exhausted for days after their births. It made it even harder to prepare for their shifting. Oh my gods!
Aliona gasped.
Look at her eyes!
My sweet baby girl's eyes fluttered open as she met my gaze, and I was shocked to see the jade color of Mona's eyes with swirls of my own amethyst color mixed in between. I'd never seen anything like it, and she stared at me as though she wanted me to get a better look. Mona sat up enough to look for herself, and her mouth dropped open in surprise.
Wow,
she breathed.
I'd say she has our eyes, my lord.
That she does. I chuckled and rubbed her chubby little cheeks. I don't think she could get more beautiful.
Would you like me to take her measurements now, your majesty?
The nurse asked as she looked at us with a smile.
Not yet, Hilda.
Mona replied without looking away from our daughter.
I don't think I can let go of her just yet.
Hilda nodded and resumed her task of cleaning up Mona's bed from the birth as a second nurse joined her to help. What were you saying about her shifting? I asked. How soon does that happen?
Oh, any time,
Mona laughed.
You have to be ready as soon as they're born,
Hilda added.
Babies usually shift within the first hour of their births.
How? I asked. I had no clue how to do it at first.
It's a natural ability in centaurs,
the nurse explained.
But they can't really control it. Sometimes it's the first cry that causes the first shift, and sometimes it's getting hungry. We never know until they do it, so we always have to be prepared for it.
I wonder if my hatchlings will be the same way, I murmured to Aliona. We may need to read up on that, too.
Definitely,
my wife giggled.
I'd like to know if I'm growing this child in dragon or human form. Oh, a dragon-human hybrid?
Hilda asked.
Oh, sorry to eavesdrop, but that's never happened as far as I know. Since female dragons lay eggs, I'm afraid you're entering into just as new of a territory as the dragon centaur hybrid you see here. We weren't sure which form she'd take at birth either. I'm just glad I didn't birth an egg.
Mona chuckled. It might have been easier, I pointed out with a grin.
I'll just let the princess try that instead,
the centaurus said, and winked at my wife. We joked around and cooed over the baby for a while before Mona finally agreed to let Hilda and the other nurse measure her. They carried the baby to a small scale, weighed her, and measured her length.
Oh, your majesty!
Hilda called out.
Look!
Mona nearly shoved me out of the way to hurry over to the scales, and we watched with fascination as the little girl's face scrunched up. I wasn't sure if she was about to take her first poop, nor was I sure if I wanted to watch it. But then I realized her feet were slowly changing shape. Her toes curled into hooves, and the lower half of her body elongated as a second pair of legs sprouted from her horse-like rear end. A long, dark tail erupted from her skin, and then it got weird. Hilda and her companion stepped back with surprised screams, and Mona, Aliona, and I got closer. While the baby took her centaur shape, we soon realized it wasn't horsehair that covered her horse legs.